I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Shinan Liu, my student, and Joe Kelly and Jerry Kornowski from RPI, funded by the National Science Foundation. I guess, as some of you know, we've done some work in the past on weak or short wavelength spilling breakers. And in particular, we've been looking at what happens at the crest and how the wave transitions from laminar to turbulent flow and characteristics of the turbulent flow at the crest. And we've done a series of wave profile measurements and particle image velocimetry measurements with these waves. And what we found was that this is an actual profile from one of the experiments, and the wave is going from right to left. And as the wave steepens, this capillary ripple system forms on the crest. And these are very weak spilling breakers. And there's a bulge up at the front, a very large bump. And the leading edge of that we call the toe, and then ahead of that there's a train of capillary waves. In this previous work, we found that the crest structure, the shape of this, was independent of the wave frequency. It scaled with the surface tension, we figure. Well, there's only one surface tension in these experiments. And transition occurred from our PIV measurements when flow separation occurred right at this high upward curvature point. And then later, this point runs down the wave face and the whole crest region is filled with a vortical flow. There's in these waves that we've studied, there's little or no overturning of the free surface. It's all dominated by surface tension. If you look down on it, you might occasionally see an air bubble, but not very much. And other people have been working in this area as well. Michael Longett Higgins had a series of papers, starting with his paper on capillary rollers and bores. Marshall Tulin, Nguyen Dahmermuth, Sinisaris, and Howe all doing theoretical and numerical work. Some experiments by Okuda in 1982 on wind waves, Ibuchi et al. On wind waves as well, and our work shown down here, and there are others as well. I wanted to show just one result from Michael Longett Higgins' papers. This is showing the evolution of the almost highest wave, and if you look over here on the vertical axis, you can see this is 0.09 here. So the water level is quite a bit lower than this, the mean water level. And this wave transitions, creates a jet at the crest. There's no surface tension in these calculations. And the jet would impact way up here. So this would initiate some kind of turbulent event, which would then spill down the wave face. These things occur very fast. So to the naked eye, you would probably think that this, well, if you could make, if you had a wave without surface tension, that you would not see the jet, probably, and you would just see it start to spill. However, similar calculations that were done with surface tension show that this became this with a large bulge in capillary waves. And similar results were found by Marshall Tulin and his students looking at breaking in wave groups, and as the waves became short, less than about a meter or so, it went from a plunging jet to a shape like this. So given the importance of surface tension in these flows, we decided to look at how surfactants might affect them. In fact, in our previous experiments, we fought surfactants all the time, trying to clean up the tank and get rid of them as best we could. And eventually, I guess, we just kind of gave in and decided to put them in ourselves, thinking that might be easier than getting rid of them. But the measurements of surfactant properties turn out to be quite difficult as well, and it adds a whole range of parameters to the experiment. I've shown a little schematic over here. We use soluble surfactants, so you mix them into the bulk of the water, and then they adsorb onto the free surface. When the wave goes by, there's surface straining. At the crest, there's compression of the surface, so you locally increase the concentration of surfactant. The desorption from the surface and the adsorption timescales are on the order of minutes. But the waves here have frequencies on the order of 1 hertz. So to the wave, these surfactants are effectively don't diffuse into the surface. I can't think of the word, sorry. Pardon me?
Like additional pressure.
Well, it's more than that. The surfactants have a surface viscosity, have elasticity, and have a surface tension that varies with compression of the surface. So it makes things quite complicated. Did I miss one? No. Okay. So our idea was then to perform a set of breaking wave experiments with the same wave generation motion in each case, but to change the surfactant and the concentration of surfactant in the tank and do a series of experiments. We did four different surfactants, but I'm going to concentrate on these first two, Triton X100, which is symbolized by TX in the figures, and sodium dodecyl sulfate, which is SDS. Triton X100 is the stuff that's in PhotoFlow solution. If you've ever developed film, that's the chemical in there that reduces the surface tension, and SDS is in many household detergents. We used a set of mechanically generated waves. We measured the crest profile histories by methods I'll show you in a minute, and we performed in situ measurements of surface dynamic properties in the tank. And then we attempt to correlate the wave measurements with the surface dynamic property measurements. You know, as a laboratory experimentalist, you're always trying to reduce the number of variables and have complete control. And of course, in surfactant experiments, you don't really. I mean, you put in one surfactant, it has and another surfactant. They have different compression characteristics. They have different surface viscosities and different elasticities. So many parameters change all at the same time. This is our wave tank. It's 14.8 meters long. It's 1 meter deep. There's a wave maker over here, and we make our waves with dispersive focusing, or chirps, as was discussed by a couple of people yesterday. There's an instrument carriage which rides on oil film bearings, so it has a very smooth ride. And they're both driven by servo motors and controlled by the same computer, so you can arrange things so the carriage moves along with the wave crest as it breaks. And all the measuring equipment for the wave is here on the carriage, and the measuring equipment for the surfactant properties is here in front of the wave maker. When the tank is calm, we make surfactant properties measurements, we pull the equipment out of the way, and then we do wave experiments. There's a skimming and filtration system. As you can imagine, this is a pretty important part of the experiment in cleaning up the tank before you do the measurements, and it's not shown here, but I'll talk about how we do that. Water treatment becomes an issue. So this is the way the experiments are done. I present this because people who work on surfactants usually do experiments in triply distilled water in little tiny tanks in clean rooms. And this is a big wave tank, so it's not the same thing. And we start by filling the tank with filtered tap water. There's about 5,000 gallons of it. And we add chlorine to 10 parts per million. That's higher than you would want to swim in. And we skim and filter and put bubbles through the tank for about 3 days or so until we get the surface so that the surface tension level is such that I'll show you in a minute. And then we lower the chlorine level to practically zero by adding hydrogen peroxide. Then we put fluorescent dye in the water. If we don't lower the chlorine level, the fluorescent dye disappears on you pretty quickly. And it also affects the surfactant, so we have to get rid of that. And then as soon as that's done, we perform clean water experiments measuring surface properties and waves, and then add surfactant to the tank at the end of the day, and the next day we repeat this with surfactant in the tank. Then we add more surfactant, and we do it again, and so the experiment proceeds with one tank of water lasting about 5-6 days or so. So it's a little bit like a field experiment in a way. And you should remember that even though I call this SDS or Triton X100, there's really other things in the tank as well. Particularly as time goes on, bacteria are growing in the tank, and as a byproduct of their respiration, they produce surfactants. There's stuff coming in from the air in the lab, so we control as best as you possibly could, I think, without having a clean room to do the experiments in and a lot of distilled water. So this is our wave measurement technique that I know a number of you have seen before. Our instrument carriage shown here riding along the tank fixed with respect to the wave crest. There's a laser head on the carriage, and with some optics it produces a light sheet that cuts the center plane of the tank. And over here a high-speed camera looking down with an angle of about 5 degrees on the water surface viewing the intersection of the light sheet and the water surface and the center plane of the tank, so it gives you the wave profile there. The water is mixed with about less than one part per million of rhodamine 6G, and the sidewalls are glass. Surface property measurements are difficult. We built this Langmuir trough, which forms the main instrument for all the measurements. It has Teflon walls in it, and it's open vertically. And it's lowered onto the free surface of the tank when you want to make measurements. This barrier just barely touches the water surface here. And over here, when we make these first measurements called surface pressure isotherms, we put the surface tension measuring device, which is called a Wilhelmy plate, over here. And we record the surface tension. When we first put it down, the barrier is way over here to the right. And you measure the ambient surface tension in the tank. And then you move the barrier over to the left, and as you do, you're increasing the number of surfactant molecules per unit area, and so you're increasing the local concentration of surfactant. And as that happens, the surface tension changes. And if you make a plot of the surface pressure, which is the ambient surface tension minus the measured surface tension, I'm sorry, the clean water surface tension minus the measured surface tension, versus the area in the tank divided by the initial area when the barrier is all the way over at the right, then you get what's called the surface pressure isotherm, an analogy to the pressure volume curve at constant temperature for a gas. Yeah. Yes, we check that out, and we move fast enough so that desorption isn't a problem. Yeah, the desorption occurs over 5-10 minutes or so. And so there probably is a little effect, but it's not very much. We tried it at different rates, too, to see if we got different results. A harder measurement is the surface elasticity and the surface viscosity. The surface viscosity in a surfactant is that we measure here is the sum of the shear viscosity and the dilational viscosity. And to do that, we put the barrier over here at the left and oscillate it back and forth with frequencies on the same order as the wave frequencies in the experiment. And when you push the barrier out, you compress the surfactant in front of it, and you make a surfactant compression wave that travels along the surface of the tank. And when you pull it back, you rarefy it, and so you get a sinusoidal variation in surfactant concentration with virtually no vertical height of the surface. And so it's hard to measure. And we borrowed a technique due to Ding and et al., and we generate capillary waves over here with a knife edge. The capillary waves propagate this way, and they're measured here with the slope gauge. And as the surfactant wave goes by, the surface tension is changing. So the speed of propagation of the wave from the generation site to the measurement site changes, and you get a phase shift in the capillary waves. And you can process that data to actually measure the strength. And we move the measurement point around over here, so we effectively measure the dispersion relation of the longitudinal waves. And then from that, you put it into an analytical theory and back out the surface viscosity and the surface elasticity. There's lots of details to that, which there really isn't time to show you. These are surface properties for SDS. Over here is the ambient surface tension versus concentration in the tank, showing it decrease as you add surfactant. These two points I'll talk about in a second over here. This is the surface pressure versus the area ratio in the Langmuir trough. Here you put it in and you get the ambient surface tension, which is clean water surface tension in this case. There's no added surfactant to the tank. So you get a zero surface pressure. And then as you compress the surface, when you get over to about here, about 60 or 70% compression, the surface tension starts to drop, indicating that there were surfactant molecules on the surface. They were just so far apart that they didn't affect the surface tension very much. You push them together enough, which happens at the wave crest, and things start to change. In fact, this was our big fight when we did our original experiments in clean water. If this surface tension starts to drop about here, well, the wave behavior changes. Once you get it to be about this, you get about the same result as you would if this curve came over here and went up, or went even further and went up. So there must be compression on the at the crest on this order that's affecting the capillary waves and things in the wave. These two cases are both with the same concentration of SDS, the highest concentration we used, and the filled symbols were taken 3 days after, I'm sorry, the open symbols were taken 3 days after the filled symbols. So we got it up to that concentration and we just let the tank sit for 3 days. Bacteria are growing, people are making popcorn down the lab or something like that, and the surfactant level in the tank changes. And this was the closest we ever had to having a controlling a couple of parameters at a time instead of everything as we change surfactants. Because here, the surface ambient surface tension was practically the same in these two experiments. The surface pressure isotherm was the same until we got to a compression of about 0.4 here. And then the later one had a much higher slope. That means a much higher elasticity at high compression levels. And these are measurements of the equilibrium elasticity measured from the longitudinal waves. And you can see as the concentration goes up, the elasticity goes down. But here on those 2 days, we got practically the same thing. But over here in the surface viscosity, it drops with concentration. But on this last day, we got suddenly a huge jump in surface viscosity. So it was kind of a lucky but nice thing that happened. These are Triton X100 data. And the main difference here is just here. These are horizontal lines, particularly at TX5. That means you've reached the point where you can't put any more surfactant on the water surface. This is called the critical micelle concentration. So at our highest concentration of TX100, we had reached that point. And as you compress the surface tension just doesn't change. And these are the measurements of the elasticity, which in this case stayed constant with concentration, and the viscosity, which also dropped with concentration, like it did in SDS. So, as I always do in these talks, I'll show you some movies. And it's important to understand the movie a little bit. The light sheet is shining down in this picture. This is what the camera sees. The light sheet's shining down in the plane of a screen here. And as it enters the water surface, it causes the dye to glow. There's a filter in front of the camera, so you don't see any laser light. You only see light from the glowing dye. And the line between the dark region in the top and the air and the light region in the bottom of the photograph is the wave profile at the center line of the tank. The stuff below that is a doubly refracted image of the light sheet entering the water. It comes through the surface, through this curved surface, so it has places where it's intense and places where it's weak, coming down in rays that are caustics, that one caustic that comes off of here. And also, when the camera looks at it, looking here, its line of sight to the intersection of the light sheet and the water surface is through the air, but the line of sight to anything down here, is looking through the water, which is curved. So there's a second refraction effect, and you get some interesting patterns down there. Movies are taken at 250 frames per second. And this is the clean water case. It's being shown at about 10 frames per second. Oh, this one seemed a little fast. I'm wondering if I made a mistake. So remember, we're in crest-fixed coordinates, and I'll stop it just right there. You can see the large bump at the crest, which we call the bulge. There are capillary waves here, which are very hard to see on the wave profile, but you can easily see in this doubly refracted image down here. We use this to measure those capillary waves in our previous work. And what happens now is the toe will suddenly start running down the wave face, and as it does, it generates ripples, probably on this shear layer with the free surface, which then propagates backward over the wave. I'll show it one more time. So that's the clean water case. And I'll show you a couple of the other films. This is the weakest concentration of Triton X100. It's the same wave. We didn't change the wave at all in these experiments. Every movie that you see will be the same wave maker motion. And it's changed by propagating through the water from the wave maker to the site, and also changed by what's happening during breaking due to the surfactant. And in this case, I'll stop it again. I got it a little bit late. You can see the capillary ripples are essentially gone. There's just a couple of little ones here which we can't actually measure. They're too small. Even though they appear in this optical image as larger, they're very, very, very tiny. The shape of the bulge changes. It flattens out and becomes a different length.
Yes.
Well, the wave maker is two-dimensional, and the waves appear two-dimensional in the tank. You can't tell from this image. You're only seeing the profile at the center line of the tank, and all this other stuff is a doubly refracted image of the light sheet, so it's not easy to see. When we proceed on, we get what looks at least qualitatively like a similar motion to the case without surfactant. And then this is the highest concentration of Triton X100. Remember, we're at or above the critical micelle concentration. The surface tension, ambient surface tension, is 30. You can't measure the surface viscosity or elasticity in this case because you can't propagate longitudinal waves. Because as you compress the surface, there's no elasticity. The surface tension doesn't change. So, but in this case, we find a plunging jet, which comes right out of the crest and looks at least qualitatively like you would see in a calculation with potential flow without surface tension, and creating very large ripples in this case. Interesting, as you add surfactant, you know, you smooth out a lot of the small-scale ripples in the experiment, but if you add enough surfactant or reach certain properties, you change to a plunging jet in this case, and the ripples get bigger. This is... Pardon me? 3 minutes? I spoke too slowly. This is SDS-4A, and this case, it looks similar to the previous one. Or not the one without the plunging jet. And this is 4B, which formed this very peculiar little jet that pops out of the wave below the crest and plunges into the water and traps a little bit of air and makes this same kind of ripple pattern. We take those pictures and convert them into surface profiles, oops, and they're shown here. Each profile is from a single image, and each one is raised above the previous one, so you can see the whole history of what's happening. These are the ripples being generated traveling backward over the crest, and here's the toe moving down the wave face. And here, in the case with, oh yeah, here, these are the weaker concentrations of SDS and Triton X100, which have nearly the same ambient surface tension. You can see this very small-scale ripple pattern that's generated. If you add more surfactant to it, this disappears again, like it was in the clean water case. And last, these are identical runs, same wave maker motion, with the jet and SDS-4B. This was just to show you the repeatability of the experiment. The flow is quite repeatable up to about here, where it's becoming more turbulent and there's random variations from run to run, but the initial splash up and the initial ripples are practically the same every time you do the experiment. So we measured some geometrical parameters, including this length going from the toe to here and the height going from the toe to the crest. And we plot those versus position in the tank. You can see quite a variation with surfactant conditions, but we ended up scaling those with the different parameters. We just tried different parameters to see what we could scale it with. And the height from the crest to the toe seemed to scale well with the gravity capillary wavelength, the one that's proportional to the minimum phase velocity, using sigma zero, the ambient surface tension. And this length LM, which goes from the toe to the crest, seem to scale with this viscous length that we developed. And we measured the jet trajectories. They were parabolic, just one sec. And it turned out not ballistic. They have the tip of the jet has a vertical acceleration of 2/3 of g, presumably because the jet tip is changing shape with time. And we tried to find out when this little funny jet occurred, the one that occurs from below the crest. And here we have a plot of the surface viscosity versus the elasticity. And these two filled points are two different surfactants where that jet occurs. It doesn't just seem to depend on ambient surface tension or anything normal that you would think of. It occurs at high surface tension and low surface tension, and must have something to do with these parameters. So our conclusions are that we found, first of all, the capillary waves disappear in just about every experiment we did. That for most surfactant cases, the breaking process is qualitatively the same. That is, there's no overturning of the free surface. Various measures of the bulge geometry scaled with different length scales from our surfactant measurements, and we found these two types of jets, one in the case where we were at the critical micelle concentration, and one where we were not. Thank you.